It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright. I got rid of my head cold from before, so then I felt lonely and I picked up another one. So I was home sick on Tuesday, and I'm feeling much better now, but it's still a little bit there, and I'm a little stuffed up, so I apologize in advance for that. Also, for some reason, this head cold was entirely in one nostril.
That's weird.
It really is, and it's really uncomfortable. Also, it's a big day today.
Why is it a big day?
Today is the first day of me using my therapy light.
What's that?
It's a lamp that I pretend is my mother, and I tell it things that it's done to me over the years. No, it's not what it is at all.
I'm going to hold the microphone here. Let's see if that works.
How fancy.
I'm doing a little something different here, folks. You can't see it, but it's...
And you probably can't hear it, but...
It's bizarre.
I'm shocked. I'm don't know if I can cope for two full episodes of this. We'll have to see.
Oh, I have to use my hands, though.
Yeah. That's good. I didn't like him just wandering around. like him kept busy.
Cute.
But no, therapy light is... So, there's a variety of stuff with limited clinical support at this point that subjecting a person to light can help with certain... disorders. The big one being seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that, using light for that.
Yes, and that's what I'm using it for.
Oh.
I suffer pretty badly from it, and it's been getting worse over the years. Last year was terrible. It doesn't really kick in for me until sort of after the new year, which is coming for a lot of people. It's the point at which you've been in winter for a while.
Yeah.
And, like, spring's going to be soon, but it's not there yet.
Yeah.
But already I had been noticing sort of depressive spells that has gotten grayer and things like that. So I decided to jump on it now. And so I got one. Showed up last night. I used it for the first time this morning.
I mean, do you have anything to say about it?
It hasn't done nothing. Not any taller. Not my hair is the same. I mean.
So, why do you think? I think I understand that. I think I understand the issue that you're having and the reason you need a light or that might help. But why don't more people suffer from this? And why do people, such as myself, I'm pretty certain I don't have any ill effects in the winter at all.
I think more people suffer from this than are aware.
Yeah, probably.
That
sounds like that kind of thing.
And to be fair, mine's all self-diagnosed or whatever, but it's like, yeah, if you find that you're depressed at the same time of year,
sure,
every year,
sure,
there's probably something to that.
Yeah.
And not all seasonal affective disorder is winter depression. That's other. It's a common one.
Oh.
But there are other versions.
Are there? What?
Yeah.
Like...
People have a spring lethargy, and there's a summer one, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Summer one. What is it about?
It's hard to tell because the DSM doesn't even consider it a specific thing. It's a specifier to depression or bipolar disorder.
Okay.
So it's hard to say. But the theory, at least with the light therapy for this, is one is just missing sunlight in general. So, you know, the vitamin D and the melatonin business.
Sure.
But also a change in your rhythms because suddenly I wake up and it's still nighttime. Oh, and I go to the gym and I come home and it's still nighttime. And as it carries on, it'll be the point where I go to work and it's still pretty much nighttime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so part of the thing with the light is you do it in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And your body's like, oh, yeah, time to wake up.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a variant on it. I was talking with a friend because I've known some people who did this who have issues with waking up. And there's a variant, dawn simulation, where people have usually a clock or something by their bed that has some sort of light source in it. And it, you set an alarm, and like 10 minutes before the alarm, it starts to light up very, very slowly.
Interesting.
And eventually, and in theory, you get woken up by the dawn. Most of them have a thing built in where if you don't wake up by then, it starts quietly playing like a chime or something like that, just in case. But, and that's not a particular thing. I've never had trouble waking up. But so, yeah, I'm hoping this will help. I mean, I don't, like I said, I just did it today and I'm not any taller.
Well, the
thing, grown any hair.
The thing about everything you're saying, you know, you mentioned that a lot of people might not, might have this problem and not realize it, is how would.
Angie dear.
How would you know? Like,
you'd have to keep track.
I'm like, how do I know? I mean, I sleep in a room that's got a pretty thick a curtain. So it's always the same level of dark whenever I wake up. And that seems fine to me, but what if it isn't?
I mean,
how would I know?
It would just be, well, just be a matter of tracking your mood. Do you, like, everybody gets depressed sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you find you get depressed in a particular period of time? And that's the thing is, A, I didn't really suffer from it when I lived on the West Coast in Oregon, because we don't have such a huge seasonal shift like we do here. Like, here it becomes dark and cold for a very long time.
And the ocean effect keeps that from happening where you're from?
It just never got that cold. Like, we would get snow, but not a lot of snow, and not for very long. Going below freezing was a thing of, you know, a dozen days. Like, at night it would get below freezing during certain times of year. We would never have days where it didn't get above freezing in the daytime. And here we can go literally months without going above freezing.
Because, I mean, where you're from, a higher latitude even.
Yeah.
So, obviously, there's like a ocean effect or whatever. Because you're not that far from the
ocean.
Well,
and it's all weird. A professor in Grinnell used to tell me they brought over some Russian students for a semester or something like that. And they were coming over in January. So, they looked at the globe and compared the latitudes. Mm-hmm. And Iowa matches up with the Crimea, which is a very southern, like, comfortable resort area.
Oh.
So they didn't bring any coats or anything in January. Apparently, they literally had to stop at Burlington on the drive back from the airport because they're like, these children are going to die. It's always sort of all over the place. And it's different here. I think I've talked before. Sunrise and sunset are very sudden here. And back home is very gradual because we have these things called mountains and these things called trees. Here, it's like day, night.
Yeah, it is kind of like that.
Whereas back home, like, the sun would set and it's still light for like 3 more hours.
Yeah.
But so some of it was that. But then it's just, you know, sometimes you're depressed, sometimes you're not. It took me a long time to figure out, you know, and Trish actually helped. She's like, I think one time I was saying, I'm like, I'm having like an existential crisis lately. I'm really trying to figure out. And she's like, yeah, you're like this every time this year. Mm. And I was like, whoa. And I was like, I guess I sort of am. And I mean, it helps. In college, I dated somebody who had, and who was using light therapy back then. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of it.
Yeah.
And this was back in the 90s. And nowadays, they're freaking all over the place. I mean, Amazon has a billion of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not... Like I said, the clinical impact is limited. And so it's very possible a lot of it is psychosomatic and placebo effect. But the thing is, they're cheap. They're non-harmful because they all are designed with reduced or no UV radiation. So it's not really risky to try out. So, yeah, it's one of those things that people can just do, you know?
Right, but you know what I often say is that if I'm using something that I think is therapeutic... And I think it works. then it works.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, it could be all in, effect. Yeah, it could be all in my head, but that's fine. Yeah. Whatever, you know.
And that's the thing, care. And we'll see what happens here. I'm really excited about the idea that it may, like I said, it's supposed to sort of regulate your circadian rhythms better so that you would sleep better.
Yeah.
But we'll see. It's a pretty simple thing. And the thing is, I'm not changing anything I'm doing. I put it next to me. Well, the time period after I get out of the shower and, like, when I'm eating breakfast, and I usually have 45 minutes to an hour that I'm sort of sitting there and checking the internet and stuff like that before I go get dressed for work. I just have it sitting next to me for 30 minutes of that. And so, and I mean, it cost me like $30. So.
Well, I hope one way or the other it works out for you.
Me
for
too.
Sure.
I mean, and I guess we won't really, really know until, you know, January.
I seem
but last year was just really bad.
The only pattern I notice with myself when it comes to, you know, light is I seem to not like it. I seem to be a lot happier when there's less light in the summertime. I'm not depressed. I'm just annoyed at how bright and hot it is. I often joke with my wife when we go out to walk, like in the summertime, I'll get outside and after the first few minutes and I'll say something like, ugh, the vitamin D, there's just too much vitamin D.
I always say that, like, my mind is a night owl, but my body is a big morning person. And I get that, like, once I became aware, there are things where, like, if it's, I'll be feeling terrible, and then we'll have a day where it's still cold as hell, but it's, like, really sunny. And I just, like, want to go outside because I love that it's sunny.
Well, I don't know if I'm a night person per se. It's just when it's in the daytime, I like the light to be, like, I don't know, like in the fall or winter. I just like that light better for some reason.
I think one of your parents was probably a vampire.
Well, my ancestors come from a much higher. If I lived in North America, if I lived at the same latitude all of my ancestors lived, I couldn't live in the United States. I'd have to live in Canada. So I don't know if that has something to do.
That's the argument the government's been making.
I don't know if that has something to do with it or what. But I've never really cared for, you know, the harsh light of summer.
If you turned out to be Canadian, that would explain just so many things. I mean, just a lot of stuff would suddenly be like,
Well, when we started the podcast, we talked about me being Canadian or something. Remember that?
Well, no, you got into your Appalachian stuff for a while.
Yeah, hillbilly.
That was a big one. Yeah, your hillbilly magic. People were surprisingly into that.
Well, it's funny you should bring that up because I just was looking at some genealogy stuff recently and I was amazed once again at how much my ancestry is, you know, from Virginia and from the South. There's just a tiny, tiny group of people from, you know, from like Massachusetts and stuff. But just about everybody either went straight through Virginia or maybe they started in Pennsylvania, but Virginia or even my Dutch ancestors who were in New Amsterdam ended up in Virginia. So I was like, hillbillies all the way around. But,
goodness gracious.
But not.
I think there's some Virginians that would argue that point.
Thank goodness. I have the wills of a lot of the wills of my ancestors are like on file with places I can read them.
Oh, see, I thought you meant like the force of will is like inside. I have the wills
like they're probate.
Of 100 hillbillies powering my life.
They're probate documents. And a lot of my ancestors from the South were Methodists and were pietists of other kinds, and they were against slavery.
Methodists are just Baptists who can read.
So I think that might have been.
I've never, like, that joke has never meant anything to me, and I just love it. It's from goddamn Man from Snowy River or something. And it's not even a movie I've seen. I don't know why. I just always like that
but
joke.
I think a lot of Southern folks who moved to Iowa did so a little bit because of that. A lot of, if you look at the history of a lot of counties in Iowa, the first churches in those counties were Methodist churches. And they probably just wanted to live somewhere where they felt like they were surrounded by people who shared their values.
I can't remember it now. Trish and I discovered another weird Iowa war, quote unquote.
Not the Honey War?
No, there was a different one. And she's like, you got to tell William about it. And I can't remember what it was now.
I probably know, but I don't.
Something where the National Guard had to show up. And then everybody surrendered.
Okay, I don't know.
It was something where like the mayor showed up and they took him hostage or something. I don't know.
Oh,
it was
weird. I'll have to look
that up. No.
You remember?
I do. Sort of. I'm really hoping you remember this because it'll help. So, if you look at your taxes.
Yeah.
We pay for a tax called brucellosis.
What?
Yes.
I don't know what that is.
Exactly.
Remember ever seeing
it. Neither did we. And what it is it's a kind of, it's a disease similar to tuberculosis. It's another tuberculosis, and I think it's called brucellosis. Maybe it's something's brucellosis or so. I think it's I think I remember thinking it was like, who's Bruce and why does he? But, and it's because in Iowa, it is mandatory that all cattle are tested for TB, tested or maybe even vaccinated for TB and for brucellosis or whatever it is. And it is in the state law, and is in the state law that if there are not enough funds, Iowans will be taxed for it. So some years it's nothing, but some years it's like, you know, 42 cents or whatever, because it hardly matters. And it goes back to a time when they finally got a reliable TB test, and because there was a big problem with it, and a bunch of farmers didn't trust it was essentially anti-vaxxing movement back then. They didn't trust it. And so the government was like, we have to test this so you're not spreading this around. And they refused, and it became this whole standoff, and eventually the National Guard was brought in.
Huh.
And then they made it a law.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Every year you pay somewhere between zero and, like, 47 cents to brucellosis. And that's just how it's listed on there. It's, like, just the one word that nobody knows.
Well, I mean,
and it's called, like, the TB War of Iowa, or something like that.
Back in the 20s, I think it's the 20s, there were some farmers would strike, and there was some violence around that stuff, but I don't remember it ever being something.
Look it up. I mean, I think we mostly pulled this off of Wikipedia, so I'm sure it's easy to find.
Look it up.
Yeah. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to Light Therapy is a Cure for Brucellosis Hour. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat, the only podcast. The Magical Talking Hat podcast. That's what we call it, right? The only podcast in the world that can't remember its own fucking name. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 449.
I literally emailed you the numbers today.
You did. A two-parter.
Yes.
Part.
It's going to be matched with 452. As we've established, nothing makes sense. Because we're getting ready for that big, long gap. You guys are just going to keep having episodes, but we're not going to see each other for like a month.
Yeah.
It's going to be weird.
It'll be a month.
And that episode after we come back is going to be absolutely just dull as shit for the rest of you.
And then.
Because it'll just be us catching
up. We'll have to do a double because of Thanksgiving the very next week.
No, it's all going to go to hell. So we're shoring up now. We are preparing for the drought. Which means this episode I'm going to explain to you how the podcast works, but I'm not going to explain the next one, which will happen November 7th or something.
Something.
We have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks, good people who have been working at it but could stand to work at it some more, write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Quarter snot filled, because half of two of us,
mm-hmm.
or half of one of the two of us,
mm-hmm.
filled with a quarter snot. Servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is really most of it. So, yeah. All right, so it's only been 1 week this time.
That's right.
How has your week been?
It's been good, as everybody knows, I love October. It's my favorite month. We go out and enjoy the weather and stuff. Been doing a lot of genealogy stuff because
you have the wills of 100 hillbillies deep in your soul.
Because we've got people who are testing their DNA contacting us saying that they think they're related to us and they were adopted, so they don't know who their family is.
Scam. They want your money.
No.
It totally is. You don't know yet.
No, they want, they're trying to find out what their ancestry is. They were adopted and they don't know.
Oh, goodness.
So, been helping some people figure out, you know, who their family is and maybe even narrow down who their parents were and things like that.
You're going to have a big reunion with all these new relatives.
No.
That'd be cool.
It is kind of fun meeting all these people. But when you're doing genealogy, and the reason I brought up the probate records that I have is because it's always a big relief when you have Southern ancestors, like nearly all of mine are, and you see their will, and there are no slaves on it.
Yeah. That's a bullet dodging there. Yeah.
You're always really happy about that. But it is a very difficult thing when you find some where there are.
Yep.
And I'm very thankful to say that not very many of my ancestors participated in that, but some of them did, and I hate it.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't a white guilt thing. I mean, this is just, it's just something that every time it happens, I'm like, oh, that
sucks.
Well,
it's an attachment to your ancestors, because that's the thing for me. I know of no slave owning ancestors. I totally might not. The odds are probably in favor that I do, although we mostly were northerners, but I mean there was a time where that was a thing.
Yeah still. Sure, yes,
but that's mostly right. I'm just like, yeah, no, I mean, but all my ancestors still lived in the society that was built on that, and I still live in the institutions like my associated guilt and connection to that grossness is the same whether or not people who lived before me who were blood related.
But there's an existential aspect to it, right? It's like, I know there are things I know about my family history where if some relative of mine had acted a little less like an ass.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't even exist.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't live where they lived, or they wouldn't have met who they met, or they wouldn't, you know what I'm saying? So my whole existence is predicated on a few people who I absolutely know were horrible people. And because they were horrible to other human beings, either Native Americans or, African Americans, because they did that, I was allowed to eventually exist.
Mm-hmm.
How do you not? How does that not bother you? I mean, it bothers me, and
I mean
there's nothing just, I can do about it, but it bothers me.
Well, and it becomes the chaos theory thing, because also, if those people had been a little less shitty, there's probably a lot of other people that wouldn't exist, like black people whose ancestors were essentially forced to reproduce against their will. But now those people are alive, and that's theoretically a good thing. I mean, that it gets really, it gets into would you kill Hitler if you had a chance territory. I mean, we all should feel horrible for the bones of the society we live in, without a doubt, but it's also something we can't impact, and how much it related to our specific embryo. Again, I mean, I can't put a lot of what I want to say, blame, weight on that per se.
Well, I mean, to the extent I'm ashamed of my family who did the people who did horrible things, I'm very proud of the people who didn't.
Well, and maybe this is a different thing.
Who stood up and said, hey, this isn't right.
I'm ashamed of members of my family that I have known. So to me, what the dead ones did, I'm like, no, I've literally known existing shitty people in my family, so. And some great people, too. Like, it's all over.
Yeah, I guess I can't think of anyone in my family. I mean, everybody I can think of. Stop it. Everyone I can think of that I'm like, boy, I'm glad I never knew that person. I mean, they're dead.
Yeah.
Pretty
Did
recent.
You kill them?
Like, my mom's maternal grandfather, I'm really glad I didn't know that guy. Sounds like he was a terrible person. I mean, he was nice enough to his family and everything, but that doesn't count much for me. If you're nice to your family, who cares? But if you're mean to other people, that's just wrong.
And that's the thing that gets mixed. I have, out of the variety of grandparents I have, and I have a few because different people married different times and things. I have cherished memories of some of them. But I also know some really shitty things they did. And in some cases, as they got older, the shittier kind of people they became. And it can be tricky sometimes, but I try and, like, acknowledge the fact that they are the same person, and that's okay. Like, it does, one doesn't take away from the other.
Well, that's...
And it's the same thing, that's your shitty ancestors don't take away from who you are. But also, no matter how good you may or may not be, doesn't take away from your shittiness of your ancestors.
Yeah.
Just recently, I want to credit who it was. I want to say it was Mike Kaplan. I don't know. It was just a comedian I was listening to on the radio. And they were talking about weird, like, racial stereotypes. And they were talking about Latino and Mexican stereotypes. And they said, the people out there who said, you know, the Mexicans, they're all lazy, good for nothings. But they also say the Mexicans, they're stealing all of our jobs.
Well, and they're hardworking. You hear that, like, all the time, too.
How does that work together? How can they be stealing the jobs if they're too lazy? And you ask the racist, and the racist is like, well, some of them are lazy. And some of them are really hardworking. And then I'm like, oh.
Like white people.
So they're like all people everywhere?
Yeah, right.
In that case, I agree with you, and you are bad at racism. And I've been working on this because I don't keep a lot of heroes, but sometimes I do, and it's, well, let's pull one from the news. Ellen DeGeneres.
Okay.
Ellen DeGeneres is in the news lately.
Because of the whole Bush thing?
Exactly. Ellen DeGeneres was seen at a football game. Hanging out in the owner's box with, among other people, George W. Bush.
Hobnobbing.
Hobnobbing.
If you will.
And taking pictures and sharing a joke and stuff like that. And people were like, Ellen, what the fuck are you doing? That guy's horrible. That guy did terrible things for LGBT people during his time as presidency. What is wrong with you? And her response on television was, you know what? When I say be kind to people, I mean be kind to everyone. I can be friends with someone even if I don't agree with their political views. To which the internet... Well, actually, to which all the other famous people out there, because they're also scrutinized ridiculously and want to be able to hang out with whoever they want, were like, go, Helen! That's such a wonderful idea! And then a whole bunch of the rest of the internet was like, yeah, but he's legit a war criminal, and you're kind of... By associating with him and being publicly friendly with him, you're kind of legitimizing the horrible shit he did and thousands of people that died because of his lies and or negligence. And here's the thing. I am not happy that she's friends with George W. Bush. And that's shitty. And it pisses me off, and it strikes me as a very... rich out of touch thing. And I'm just very unhappy about it. I don't now hate Helen. I mean, Helen. I hate her enough I can't get her name right. I don't now hate Ellen. Yeah. I'm still a pretty big fan of Ellen in general and her wife, and I think they are cool people. I also think this is a shitty thing. And it has to be both. Because it is so seldom. If there's a person, especially if it's like a famous person or whatever, that, like, they're just awesome and you have seen them do no wrong, you just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Because the people that have done no wrong don't exist.
That's true.
And that being said, if you're like, you know what? This particular shitty thing they did means I don't want to buy their stuff anymore, or I don't want them in public office anymore, or I don't want to consume whatever it is they put out in the world anymore. That is a totally fine way to be.
Yeah.
But everybody's got some shitty stuff, and hopefully everybody's got some good stuff. There are cases where it's hard to tell. That's harder for me. It's easier for me to admit that people that I think are cool did shitty stuff, but there's people that I think are shitty, and it's hard for me to be like, well, okay, this one time. So I have difficulty with that.
Well...
Okay, so other than digging up dead hillbillies and talking to strangers who want to scam you for Nigerian prince money, which
you've
been up to.
No, it's not like that. They're good people. It's fun to meet people because, I mean...
Patently false. Not.
I mean, I think I talked about how my dad was looking for a cousin of his that sort of abandoned the family. One of Dad's uncles was an alcoholic and I think a little violent when he got drunk, and one of his boys just left, and Dad never knew what happened to him. And through the DNA stuff that we do.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that his dad had just died.
Yeah, yeah. Grandfather, actually, in this case, had just died. And she said, oh, we've been looking for you guys. I said, well, we've been looking for you. But they didn't know he wouldn't tell them anything about us.
Yeah.
So they had to find us through this service, and it was too late. He had just passed away.
This is another great example. These DNA tests are absolutely just securing masses of information that will be used however they want.
Yeah.
It's also doing some really cool shit.
Well, for me it is. I mean, and Dad...
I suspect you are literally the only one.
Dad went out and...
No, lots of people are having this.
They were living out So this is his... the fellow that passed away was Dad's first cousin. So he went out... This was his daughter that he went out to visit, so that's his first cousin once removed, out in Virginia. And
I didn't know he went out to visit.
Yeah, he did.
All right.
And he got to talk to him a little bit. So it was really nice. And, you know, I was glad. I felt bad that he never caught up with his cousin David. But for him to go see David's kids and talk to them, I mean, that meant a lot to me that he was able to do that. And like you just said, the only way that ever would have happened is if we were doing this DNA stuff. So I don't know. Other people I realize aren't that interested in genealogy, but I've always been, because for me it's about, I'm kind of tired of reading history books and it's all about, you know, kings and rich people and stuff. It's like, I want to know how ordinary people lived. And one way to learn that stuff is to do the research of your own family and what they live like. So it's been enriching to me in a lot of ways. And this past week there was another guy that contacted me, and he didn't know who his family was. And I was able to tell him, oh, well, you're related to me through this person, down through this line. I couldn't figure out who his actual parents were, but I could work out who his grandparents and great-grandparents were.
Yeah.
So that was good for him. And so, you know.
Once again, part of this is reminding me that you are an incomplete person until you read The Dispossessed by Ursula Le Guin. Holy shit. Coming up. Seriously, there are sections of this book that I'm like, I'm pretty sure William has told me this in so many words.
Well, it's on my list. I won't say it's on the top, because when you go into the cart for Amazon, they're just all there. They're not in any particular
order. And I, once again, will continue to hate you until I physically watch you reading it all the way through. I'm going to get bored as hell.
It'll happen one of these days.
But you're going to love that book.
It's favorite book. I'm reading...
You're going to be like, Frankenstein who?
Also, I'm reading Nathaniel Hawthorne's short stories. I have a book.
You're not going to give a shit about those anymore either.
Complete short stories, and I'm really enjoying them. I think they're great. But how was your week?
Scary.
I wish mine was, because we try to watch like horror movies and stuff this time of year, and all the ones that we're seeing are dumb.
We've seen two.
That are good?
That are worth talking about.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm going to go with good, I think. But because here's the thing. We have not just picked sort of random or like old trashy classics or things like that. These are two that are very recent and that were both very critically acclaimed.
Okay. Well, I like both of those things. Yes. That's what we're usually looking for, is recent, critically acclaimed. And
I feel like you've seen one of these and possibly both of these already.
Well.
So.
Oh, well.
So the first one was Us.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
The Jordan Peele movie.
Yeah.
Originally, Trish thought she was maybe a little... It looked a little too scary to watch, and so I was going to watch it without her. But then October comes around, and this is when she likes to watch scary movies. So she's like, let's watch it. And I was like, we do need to watch it. I've needed to watch it for a while. Get Out, maybe one of my favorite movies now.
It's pretty good.
Love that movie. Got to see this. So we watched it. Trish liked it quite a lot.
Okay, good.
I believe that is the extent to which I can confidently say her position on this. I have come around to liking it quite a lot.
Okay.
It took a little time because I walked in with expectations. Here's the thing. In my opinion, it's not as good as Get Out.
Yeah, that's my opinion also.
But that is an incredibly high bar.
Yes, that's true. I agree.
Get Out won awards, very deserved. Get Out to me is like a perfect film when you talk about that concept of like every aspect of the writing and the directing and how it was shot and its effect as social commentary and its effect as an intriguing movie. Like, it's just amazing. And Us wasn't that.
No.
And so at the time, I was just very disappointed. And I still was like, it's good, but it's not as good as that. As time is going on, it's one that has made us think and talk about it and things like that.
Sure.
And it is really good, and I should very highly recommend it. It is also a very different kind of movie than Get Out. Get Out is very much a horror movie, very much a thriller with psychological horror and legit horror elements to it.
Yeah.
Us is straight up fucking horror. I would put it somewhere, some sort of hybrid of zombie slasher almost. And it's very violent and bloody and things like that. And it's very much in a standard horror movie thing. But it, again, has all the little touches that are so Jordan Peele's just obsession with detail and reference and things like that. And it's...
I mean, it's definitely well-directed. There's no question about that.
And beautifully shot. And in my opinion, very well-performed. There were some casting choices that at first I was like, what the fuck are they doing? And they worked out great. For reasons I can't fully explain, the mythology of Get Out felt more solid to me.
Yeah.
This one feels malleable. And I think part of that is it's dealing with sort of layers of themes more than Get Out was a very straightforward. In my opinion, Get Out is a hard movie to misinterpret.
Yeah, that's
Us has a lot of interpretations available to you.
I can agree with
that. And they're very interesting interpretations. And then there's just there's a little bit about the mythology that, like, once we sort of understand what's happened as best as we ever could, I'm like, huh, okay. And? I mean, and it said interesting things that happened, but, like, to me, again, Get Out just had so much, like, this is a whole sort of society, and I can see the motivations and the influences. And this, I was like, oh, so a weird thing happened, and now things are weird. And so, at its baseline story, it didn't grab me as much. But there are lots of themes to play with, and it's another one of those that we have spent days talking about and thinking about. Hmm. And it is very interesting. So I do need to highly recommend it. But it's not Get Out, both in quality or in content. It's still very good. It's still probably one of the best horror movies you will see nowadays.
When I saw it, it made me think, okay, I have a feeling that what I'm seeing here is a good taste of what his Twilight Zone series is probably like.
Oh, I like this way better than his Twilight Zone series.
Well, I think I would actually really like his Twilight Zone.
You might.
Not that I would think everyone is a hit or something, but I would super appreciate what he's trying to do. And I'd be able to give him a lot of leeway if I thought it was a little off.
This is going to sound strange to somebody who's seen the movie Us, but Us was way less heavy-handed than Twilight Zone, in my opinion.
Oh, okay. I see.
Because, again, like, Twilight Zone was never subtle.
Yeah.
And this is not subtle either, but, again, it's trying to get political modern nuance in there, and it just grinds the gears, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But we stopped watching after 4 or 5 episodes, so it's hard to say.
I'd like to give it a shot. I hope I can see it sometime.
I'm sure you'll be able to at some point. But yeah, so we saw that, and it was really good. Pretty long, too. It's over 2 hours.
I didn't really notice, though.
No, it went pretty fast.
Yeah, it
was
drag.
Another one of those that had 2 or 3 endings.
Yeah.
So is this the end? So that was a little bit of that for me. I shouldn't phrase it this way because she is a very attractive woman, but I'm in love with Lupita Nyong'o as an actor.
Yeah, she's really good.
Everything I see her in is amazing, and disappears into the role. Like,
yeah,
there was no sign of Nakia from Black Panther in this. Nope. Or in it, like, it was amazing.
Or the mom she played in that chess one. What was that called?
I didn't see the chess one.
It's good. She's great in it.
Everything I've seen her in is phenomenal. Like I said, other casting choices were weird. Tim Heidecker and Elizabeth Moss shocked me. I was like, whose idea was this? But they were absolutely perfect. They were absolutely perfect. But I was very confused at first. I was like, everybody is hiring Tim Heidecker for things, and he's doing a great job, but I'm like, this is still the same guy from Tim and Eric who made the stupid Adult Swim things. How did anybody guess he would actually be a good actor? Like, what is happening?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's in a bunch of stuff, and he's never letting me down. I'm just constantly surprised people are taking a chance on him because of the frankly stupid shit he started his career with. But whatever. The other movie we saw just last night.
Okay.
Midsommar.
No, we haven't seen that one yet. Is it good? I think we're getting it.
This one is harder to explain. It is one of the more batshit insane movies I've ever seen.
Okay.
And I think I love it.
Okay, well, I hope we like it.
I don't know that Trish loves it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, she didn't hate it or anything. Again, we saw it last night. We can't stop talking. I'm lying in bed, and I was like, oh, shit. And she's like, what? And I was like, that means da-da-da. And she's like, yeah, it does. it is really fucking long. It's like 2.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
For those of you unfamiliar, it is a movie about boring North American grad students going to a very isolated Swedish village for a midsummer festival. And hijinks ensue. it is from Ari Aster, who made a name for himself with the horror movie Hereditary recently, which I did not see, but I'm familiar with, and that was...
It's okay.
Had great acclaim.
It's okay.
I feel like this is very different. It is generally listed as a horror film, but I noticed prior to its release, it was always called a horror film. And since then, I've seen places that refer to it as a horror comedy.
Oh.
I don't know that that's accurate, but I will say there are parts that become so bizarre and intense, you start laughing. But it's almost an uncomfortable laugh. Like, what the fuck is happening? It is, again, beautifully shot. It has Florence Pugh in it, and Justin Rayner has been in a few things. It has William Jackson Harper, a.k.a. Chidi from The Good Place. This is the first thing I've seen him in that's not The Good Place, and it was so exciting to see him because I love him. Why don't you seem more excited by that, Tess Shapiro?
I'm thinking about an article I read about him recently.
So, oh, okay.
Sorry, I'm distracted. Thinking about that.
Yeah, he's in this. And also another guy named Will Poulton or Poulton. I don't know. Here's the thing. Start watching it. And this guy, I'm like, I know this guy. He was a character in the Black Mirror Bandersnatch movie.
Mm.
So then I look him up. No, he's been in a shit ton of stuff for a while. In 2014, he won the BAFTA for Best Up-and-Coming Actor against, among other people, Lupita Nyong'o at the time.
Wow. Like,
he's done shit.
Hmm.
And I should have known, because in the end credits, he got the "and" credit. And he doesn't play a particularly significant part, but he's in it. Like I said, it's a long-ass movie. Almost exactly an hour in, you've just been watching a strange but frankly kind of beautiful, if somewhat sad, film. And then shit gets real. But it's not like suddenly, like, now the monster's loose and he's killing him. Like, it doesn't suddenly become this major horror movie. But shit starts to get uncomfortable at that point.
Okay.
And just lots of things where I'm like, no. Seriously? Like, a lot of that. It is done through the lens of our two main characters are in a very uncomfortable... Two of our grad students that come to this are men and women who are really clinging to a relationship that's not working well.
Okay.
She suffered a major trauma in the beginning of the movie that has caused her to have huge depression and anxiety issues. And he is just kind of a douche. And it's one of those where, like, they probably would have broken up, but this tragedy meant they couldn't break up, you know, that kind of deal. And so, and that is absolutely the through line for this whole movie about weird things happening in small Swedish villages. And I think it lends a lot to it, because otherwise it would be a fairly generic story.
Hmm.
It's absolutely gorgeous. It's crazy. Trish points out Wikipedia refers to it as a folk horror movie.
Mm.
And a lot of it, unsurprisingly, involves the weird practices and beliefs of this small, isolated community.
Yeah.
And Trish maintains quite correctly, they don't... There's a lot of disconnects in them. Like, it doesn't make... Their beliefs don't entirely make good holistic sense, like, when you stop to think about it. And it is disappointing when you think about it.
Well, it's in a little bit... There's a little bit of a genre like this, right? Like Wicker Man.
Yes. It's definitely the old pagan cult thing.
Yeah.
But they do this in such a weird way, and it's all filmed very strangely, and it's fascinating. Oh, and a lot of psychedelia involved, because... I don't know. I'm very curious about this. There's a lot of hallucinogenic substances in the film. And at first, I'm like, that's just lazy writing. Like, you can do all sorts of weird shit if somebody's high.
Sure.
And it happens a lot in this movie, like, conspicuously so. But then I'm like, no, I think there's a point to that. I think this is very deliberate. And I specifically think so because there are things... Without giving things away, there are things that involve psychedelics that don't involve people taking them and, like, things happening, like, that are just there as a plot point for some reason. And I'm like, this is a very deliberate thing. And it has led me to believe in general that I may be reading way too much into this movie. And that I may be seeing a lot of details and connections that the filmmaker did not see.
Okay.
But I'm still enjoying it. Like, I would absolutely be rewatching this weekend if it weren't 2.5 goddamn hours long. And even then, I'm tempted. Just really impressive and really, really crazy.
Well, I hope we'll see it soon. I think... We're waiting on a disc for it, actually, from Netflix.
It's fascinating. We just got it. You can get it on Amazon, but it's like $6 to rent or something.
Wow.
But yeah, it finally came out on VOD, and I've been waiting for that because I wasn't about to go see it in the theater. But so I also recommend that one. But yeah, there is some serious violence and some serious gore and some seriously shocking things, and a lot of it is just conceptually shocking things. You're like, you just learn stuff that, like, isn't like graphic on the screen, but you're like, wow, that's fucked up. But yeah, fascinating and very, 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 very thought provoking, and for me, caused a lot of discussion, as you can see, because I've just had a huge discussion about it with myself. All right, we only got like 10 minutes. We should probably draw a thing.
The article that guy was in was talking about his character in A Good Place bringing representation to black nerds.
Right? Definitely.
Well, this was...
I mean, he's not sole representation, but it is a misaligned field, and he's a good example of it.
This was one of the issues I had in Supergirl when they cast Jimmy Olsen as a black guy.
Yeah.
But not anything like...
Like regular Jimmy Olsen. No.
No. It's like, well, why did you do that? Is it because you don't think black people can be nerds? Or what are you trying to say here?
See, and I'm still watching a bunch of that College Humor stuff and, like, actually and all that now because I subscribe to that streaming thing. There's so many fucking black nerds. like on staff there. There's just a ton of them. I'm like, yeah, no, there's lots of black nerds.
Yes. You know, nerds can be all kinds of different people, including black people.
And when I watch the cosplay videos, too, I see tons of them.
Anyhow, Beth wants to know.
What does Beth want to know?
What color or colors of socks should one wear with blue jeans?
Ooh.
You sound like you've got a very interesting answer, because I wear white socks and only white socks all the time. They get less white as time goes on, but that's what I always wear. Jeans or anything else, really.
You are what is known as a fashion don't.
Yeah.
This is what it comes down to, specifically. When she says what color or colors, the big issue is the white ones. Because
you don't wear white ones?
At this point in my life, I have black socks, and I have white, like, ankle socks or short socks that I wear specifically to work out in. And that's it.
I mean, I have dress socks. I wear those suits and things, but usually I have white socks.
Michael Jackson, probably the worst thing he ever did.
Don't know. Go on.
Is to attempt to legitimize dark pants and white socks and dark shoes. Because that was common in his look. I guess it was sort of an 80s look in general, but I feel like he exemplifies it. And it's not a good look. If you're wearing...
But I also wear boots all the time.
Yeah, so your socks can't be seen, so I think that's not an issue with you.
You don't see my socks.
And that's the thing. Also, if you're wearing tennis shoes, I feel like white socks are okay.
Well, if I'm not wearing boots, it's tennis shoes.
If essentially you're wearing pretend exercise shoes, then you can wear pretend exercise socks. But no, in general, against blue jeans and against most colors of shoes, white socks stand out. And you do not want your socks to stand out unless you particularly want people to notice the color choice. And nobody particularly wants people to notice their white socks.
I guess. I mean, now that you say it like that, if I'm wearing anything that I'm not wearing tennis shoes or boots, I'm usually not wearing white socks.
Yeah. And if you're in a situation where your socks are visible, like, I don't just mean like a glimpse. Like, it becomes more of a thing. To a degree, it's more of a thing with women because we can't wear like capris and stuff like that.
Like, when you would go to church, you might be in a class and you'd be sitting in like chairs and people would see your socks.
And if somebody's wearing white socks with dark pants, dark shoes, of which blue jeans count, I notice.
Yeah.
Most of the time, if it's not white, I couldn't tell you what color their socks were. Unless it's something that like stood
Argyle
out.
Or something.
And that's, Argyle, funny socks, or more specific, socks that match something else on you. That's a thing that people do.
Like if you're wearing a red tie, you might wear red
exactly
socks.
Or pocket square.
Oh, okay.
Or even some people just whatever their top is.
Sure.
And I mean that's some advanced level shit there that I do not participate in.
Advanced level.
But that I mean that's a thing.
I guess.
But I feel something about it's the same thing of. In the present day, you might go outside in a t-shirt.
Yeah.
You might go outside in one that is just plain, like just like these ones I have here, just plain.
Sure.
They maybe have a pocket. They don't. You probably wouldn't go out in one that was white.
No, not likely.
It speaks of really not giving a fuck, I think is what it comes down to. It speaks of generic, and you're like, this is just what I put on. And, I mean, I'm making this stuff up. I know nothing about fashion. But in my head, it's a thing. White, it's very stark. It's like I couldn't – you didn't pick a color. Even with black, you sort of picked a color. With white, you did not pick. Unless it's an outfit that was clearly meant to be white. And nowadays, we don't have those unless it's like a white suit or shit like you're going to a white party.
Yeah, but like I wouldn't wear a white t-shirt because I wear white t-shirts underneath regular shirts. So it feels like I'm not dressed if I'm running around in a white
t-shirt.
There you go. That's what.
Because they're generic. And in the same way, you probably wouldn't wear a colored undershirt.
No, I wouldn't.
No, because white is the not.
Yeah,
white is the absence.
It won't go through. It won't show color. You know,
and so
show color
through
your shirt.
Socks, same thing.
I get to what you're saying.
I put these on because I can't rock the sockless look. But otherwise, I do not care about what I'm wearing.
It is weird. It is kind of like it's almost like it's stuff you're wearing. Well, like the socks I wear. I wear boots. You don't see my socks.
Yeah.
That makes them almost equivalent to underwear. So if people see it, it's like, that's not right.
And that's the thing. And in that case, white socks are going to be fine.
Yeah, right.
And we were raised in this.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to assume, but I grew up, all my socks were white.
Yeah,
unless
too.
It was special dress socks for my special outfits.
Right.
And all my
socks.
Underwear was white.
Yeah, me too.
That's just how it was.
Yep.
And
undershirts were white. Everything was white that you wore underneath.
I don't know at what point I was bothered by the white underwear. It came way earlier than the white socks. Hmm. And I would have some things that were just like, I'd never gotten anything like no leopard print or anything. But, you know, things like, oh, this is blue. This is red. You know, just for different. And
not the blue one.
At a certain point after I was married, I finally was like, I can't have any white underwear anymore. It just looks dumb to me. And nobody else is seeing it. My wife doesn't fucking care. But I'm like, I can't. Because we would buy, like, packs, and it's like, oh, some are black, some are gray, some are white. I'm like, no, we have to get ones that aren't white. And so now I don't own any more. And the same thing happened way later with the socks, because they were always white, and they were always tube socks.
Yeah, that's tube socks. That's
hilarious. And at a certain point, again, since I've lived in this house, I was like, I mean, I think at a certain point, other colors started drifting in and stuff, but there was a point much later that I'm like, I'm done with white socks. And it doesn't help. They all also stain really easily.
Yeah, that is a big
problem. And get dingy really easily.
Yep.
But just in general, it screams of generic. And if you're fine with that, more power to you.
Do you think?
But if you're not, I think that's legit.
Do you think that has an impact on how people perceive vanilla? I mean, when someone wants
absolutely.
When someone wants to talk about something being regular, plain, and boring, they say it's vanilla.
Yes.
But vanilla is a
vanilla
flavor.
Vanilla is a flavor, yes.
A delicious flavor.
Yes.
That's not fair.
Yes. No, this is definitely a thing.
I love vanilla.
And it is not a non-flavor. And people think it's the flavor of sugar. No, vanilla is a very specific flavor. And if you get, like, real vanilla bean and stuff, you can tell.
Oh, man, is it good.
But no, and I think a big part of it is that it's white.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
Because I remember when Breyers came out, and their vanilla was way more exciting. And let's be honest, part of the reason was it had the little dark
flecks.
Speckles in
it. Yeah, the little dark. Flecks.
My family, which is how we all have diabetes now, would do taste tests when we would buy the square half gallon of. Like Safeway brand vanilla.
Sure.
We would buy the container of Dreyer's, which is what Edie's is called on the West Coast.
Okay. It's Edie's here in Iowa. Yeah.
Yes. And,
in the Midwest.
And they were the big fighter. Dreyer's and Breyer's were fighting a lot.
Okay.
And then we would get Breyer's and we would literally do taste tests. And we did it with vanilla and we did it with chocolate. And Breyer's won for my family every time.
I'm not surprised. I mean,
the vanilla especially.
Yeah,
really,
man, it's so good.
Really amazing. Trish is very opposed to Breyers. I've never been entirely sure why, so it doesn't come up a lot anymore. We do a lot of Blue Bunny, although recently we're trying to ease back on that because their owner pays a lot of money to Steve King, who's one of the worst people in the world.
Blue Bunny is an Iowa company, and they're out in his district.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been trying to not give them as much of our business. I don't know exactly how we got on this, but yeah, I definitely think part of vanilla's deal is that it's white, and when it's not the fancy stuff with the flex, it's just white. And I know, I definitely think that's a component.
I think vanilla just gets a bad rap for that. Not,
I think that's fair.
I love vanilla.
I was amazed when I first saw somebody order a vanilla shake. And then I tasted it. I'm like, oh, no, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite tasty.
Yeah.
I of course, I love chocolate more, but I like vanilla quite a bit. Yeah. And cream soda. I've always loved cream soda.
Cream soda, which, again, yeah, they're very big on that's the vanilla taste. At least A&W is very big on it being a vanilla taste. All right. Well, this has been a random episode. Pretty sure I'm going to call it The Will of 100 Hillbillies. Anyway, y'all stay tuned, and next week we'll have a new show, and then 3 weeks you'll have whatever we're about to do. In the meantime, yeah, go check out those movies if you're into that kind of stuff. Hurry and do it in October, because your wife might not be interested after October. I hope that answered your question, Beth. I got out. It was very cathartic for me. I hope it's what you were going for. Good luck. We won't even get into the fact that even when I wear brown shoes, I wear my black socks, which I know is not okay. But I'm like, I'm not going to buy separate brown socks because I don't care. That's the level for me. Sure. I care enough to not have white socks. I don't care enough to have separate brown socks. All right, get out of here.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.